Rick Ankiel is with us, former Major League pitcher and outfielder who played from 1999 through 2013, and he began his career pitching for the Cardinals, but for some unknown reason, he lost his ability to throw strikes consistently, and after trying to regain his pitching form in the minor leagues and briefly returning to the majors in 2004, he switched to outfield in 2005, and for 2.5 years, he honed his skills as a hitter and fielder in the Cardinals' minor league system. And then he returned to the majors, as I said, and the Cardinals in August of 2007. And as a Cardinal until 2009, he hit 47 home runs as an outfielder and 2 as a pitcher. And he became the first player since Babe Ruth to have won at least 10 games as a pitcher and also hit at least 50 home runs. And he also had some challenges off the field. And he's written about it all, both the baseball and the personal challenges, in a very insightful book. It's called Phenomenon: Pressure, the Yips, and the Pitch That Changed My Life. Rick, you know, writing a book like this can usually do one of two things: either bring into clear focus and give the writer a better understanding, or resurrect a lot of pain and make the writer say, "What the hell am I doing?" Which was it for you?
You know, it's really become therapeutic. I didn't know this was going to happen, but since, you know, we've come close, you know, the week prior to when the book was released and even to now, it's just been very therapeutic. And, you know, when I went through the throwing issues, the thing about it is I couldn't find literature on it, and nobody really wanted to talk about it. And I understand that now because of how dark and ugly it gets and how much it consumes you. And it's embarrassing and humiliating. And, I understand that now. But, you know, it's been rewarding in the fact that, you know, even that it's only briefly been out, I've had tons of people already come up to me and thank me and say, you know, I went through something similar, whether it was about their family stuff and growing up in a dysfunctional home, or whether it was something that they went through in their career that was similar to what I went through with the yips and the throwing stuff, and whether they were an announcer or a writer or a field goal kicker. So that's just been rewarding to have people come up and say, listen, it's helped me to hear your story, and I went through something similar.
You know, when I thought about it, I thought also about this was the perfect storm. I mean, you were a highly successful athlete. A lot was expected of you. You were a golden boy. There's pressure in sports. There's expectations. Put all of that together, and it really is a dynamic that's different than anything else in life, and I don't think anyone is really prepared to take it on.
Yeah, I can understand all those things. You know, the funny thing about it, when it happened, I just felt like I was invincible, and I didn't even really understand what anxiety was. Up to that point, I felt like I was living my dream and on my way to the top, and you know, my goal was to be one of the best pitchers ever. And, you know, certainly everything that was happening along my path was pointing the arrow north towards that. Just unfortunate, you know, whatever happened in that playoff game, I threw that wild pitch and things just started to unravel. But up to that point, I put more pressure on myself than other people did to go out there and be the best.
And you didn't have any mentor really to help you when something like this came along, because it came out of the blue.
Yeah, it came out of the blue, and you know, what I learned from it was, unless you've been through it personally, and that includes people who've been in baseball a long time, it's hard to understand how deep it gets and really how to help someone. You know, thankfully, my agent Scott Boris hooked me up with his sports psychologist, who was Harvey Dorfman, and then, you know, he tried to help me with different techniques and coping things to help me get through it, and you know, our relationship blossomed into, you know, he really became a father figure in my life and a positive male role model for me to, you know, to grow and become a better person.
Tell me a little bit about your family and growing up in Port St. Lucie, Florida.
You know, it was just dysfunction. My father was an alcoholic, a two-bit criminal, and, you know, the problem when he would show up drunk or high or whatever it was that he was violent. And, you know, he'd disappear for a few days. And when you heard that car pull into the driveway in the middle of the night, you knew it was time to, you needed to steer clear. You know, he beat my mom you know, it was just a tough way to grow up. I never really talked about that much because a lot of those memories just weren't very pleasant. But with the book, I felt like if we were going to tell the story, it was important to tell the entire story. And that's the way we went with it.
You know, when I watched your mom on television on the piece on Real Sports, I was so impressed with her. There's just something about her, and I can't put my finger on it. Maybe it's the strength, the sturdiness, the support for you. Help me out here a little bit, Rick.
Yeah, she was definitely a rock in my corner, and you know, I always carried that guilt with me. I wish I, you know, in the middle of the night when I heard her scream, and I wish I, you know, would have went out there and hit him with a bat and just ended it. But you know, I was young and I was scared, and you know, I really just wish she would have had a better life. You know, she had a rough life, and with that, and you know, I know she really felt like, you know, me and my brother needed a father, and she tried to keep things together. And then, you know, he just made it impossible for her to enjoy herself.
As I mentioned, you were a star pitcher in high school, struck out 162 batters in 74 innings. And the USA Today named you the high school player of the year. You signed that big bonus with the Cardinals. And one season in the minors, you struck out 222 batters. And you were the golden boy. How did you handle those expectations?
You know, like I said, I put more pressure on myself, and you know, my goal, you know, once I stacked up against seeing what talent was out there, I remember the first high school, you know, big tournament that I got invited to where you have all the best talent in the country all in one place. And when I came up, when I seen all the other talent and seen where I stacked up and I was one of the best there, you know, I just became highly motivated to really, you know, hone in my skills and become a better baseball player, because I knew it was a way out of that house and a way out of that life for me. You know, and it just seemed like everything just kept going the way I wanted it to go. And, you know, all the way through high school and all the way through the minor leagues, I never really had any setbacks. You know, I just kept dominating at every level I went to, including the big leagues when I got there. So that's the thing. I really felt invincible, and I didn't, I really didn't understand the anxiety part of things or the nerves side of things, because I never had any adversity up to that point in that playoff game in 2000.
Yeah, that playoff game, that is where things started against Atlanta. And really, Tony La Russa kind of laments, I think, a little bit that he wanted to shield you from the pressure for game number one. And I understand at the media event, he had Daryl Kyle sit in and answer the questions so that you wouldn't get too much pressure.
Right, and you know what's funny is I actually felt bad for Daryl Kyle, because Daryl had his career year. You know, he was the veteran and he had experience and probably deserved to get game one. You know, but I was the best pitcher coming down the stretch that last month. I won pitcher of the month, and I really felt bad for him that he had to go out there and do that interview knowing that he wasn't going to start the next day. But I understand what Tony was doing when you look at the matchups and you look at how the series was going to play out, and if somebody was going to have to pitch on short days rest later on in the series, he wanted it to be Daryl, thinking that he was older and his arm would be able to handle that better. So I understand what happened, but I don't, you know, looking back on it, I don't think it would have mattered. I could have went out there and did the press conference. I don't think, you know, I don't feel like the pressure of all that was why it happened. I mean, I'm not sure why it happened. I only know what happened afterwards. And, you know, obviously I didn't, you know, I remember in between game one and in between game two when I started, when we went on to play the Mets in the playoffs, I had a bullpen session. I was lights out with pinpoint control, and I thought, hey, I got this licked, and I'm past this and whatever, and maybe it was a mechanical thing. And then game two started, and things just started to unravel. So I had no idea, you know, really what the next 4 years of my life was going to look like. As young as I was, I just thought, hey, whatever, you know, just one of those things that happened, and I'm going to go back to being me as quick as possible.
And I would assume, because you just simply could not come up with any answers, that is probably more difficult to handle than just the technical side of pitching, isn't it?
Yeah, no question. And I'm sure, you know, as young as I was, you know, I thought I could beat it with mechanics. And I thought I could beat it with hard work. And I was probably in denial and didn't want to look at the fact that it's mental. And, you know, when I got with Harvey Dorfman and just really, I think, you know, him opening my eyes to it and understanding, and then moving into 2001, you know, that's when I realized, you know, I guess this is mental, and I'm going to have to attack it a different way. I'm not going to be able to beat it by throwing 100 pitches a day or 200 pitches a day, because that's what I thought. I figured I could beat this with hard work. That's the type of person I was. If I work harder, I'm going to get better. I'm going to fix this, and it just wasn't the case.
There were other people, Mackie Sasser, Chuck Knobloch, also Steve Sachs, John Lester even with the Cubs, and they've had problems like this as well. Did you talk to any of those people? I know you talked to Steve Blass, but what answers from people who have gone through it did you get?
You know, more than answers, what we talked about was just what we went through and how deep it was and what you were feeling and the fact that it consumed you. And that's another thing that's the hardest part. Not only that nobody has any answers, but that it consumes you. And you can't get away from from thinking about it, because all you want to do is be you again and figure out how to pitch. You know, my routine before this happened, I'd come home and turn on more baseball and watch sports shows and continue to watch other people play and learn. You know, it's, you know, watching baseball while you're playing is basically a scouting report. You're watching other guys that you're going to play against. But now what would happen is when I turn on the TV to watch baseball, now I'm watching how they throw and watching what their mechanics are. Now I'm going outside and trying their mechanics, thinking maybe that'll work for me. So it's just this revolving door that won't let go of you, and that itself is so hard.
Rick Anquillo was with us here on Sports Byline. We're talking about his outstanding book, which we're going to make a selection of the month on the Sports Byline Book Corner, Phenomenon, Pressure, the Yips, and the Pitch That Changed My Life. We continue across the country and around the world on Sports Byline. Rick Anquillo is with us here on Sports Byline. We're talking about his challenges on the field and off the field as well. Tell me a key point in all of this that still sticks with you today. What was a turning point, good or bad, for you, Rick?
You know, bad, I would say, in 2001, you know, just that's when things were the hardest. I'd wake up in the middle of the night with nightmares about not being able to throw a strike. And, you know, kind of, I think everybody can relate to this. You know, when you have a nightmare and you fall back asleep, it seems like you always go right back to the nightmare. But when you have a great dream and you fall back asleep, you can never get back to that great dream. And that's what it was for me. And I would, you know, here I am at 21 years old, and I would wake up, and you know, I'd wake up at 3 in the morning, and all of a sudden my heart's going 100 miles an hour. Now I have all this anxiety because your brain can't tell the difference between your conscious and your subconscious. And even though it's a dream, you know, it's still real. And I would have all those effects. So now at 3 in the morning, instead of going back to sleep, I'm up watching TV or reading a book or doing push-ups or taking a bike ride because I didn't want to fall back into that dream. And the nights that I had those dreams, the next day trying to play catch was near impossible because I had all this anxiety, like, you know, like I had had an accident or something. And it made those next days so hard. That's when it was at its worst, and it just seemed like I could not get away from anything.
Is that when you turned to the alcohol?
And when my first game on that first start, that's when I drank the vodka before the game. You know, I that day I was going to pitch against Randy Johnson. I didn't know it was going to happen. Somebody casually mentioned it to me, about 2 weeks before that. Like, hey, maybe you just try pitching Buzz. You know, maybe that'll take the edge off. And I just kind of blew it off, like, yeah, ha-ha, whatever. That day, and then when I got to the field, all the I was terrified, scared, frightened, you know, all those emotions that come with that. And I knew I had no chance to go out there and throw strikes. I mean, I knew it was going to be a disaster, and it was going to be a disaster in front of the world. I'm pitching against Randy Johnson. It was going to, you know, obviously it's on TV and televised. And I knew I was going to go out there and be bouncing pitches and throwing stuff off the screen. So Daryl Kyle, who was one of my you know, mentors, one of my really good friends, I went to him privately and said, hey, you know, you think you can find me a bottle of vodka and put it in a water bottle? And he said, listen, I understand you got to do what you got to do. And he did. And I went out there and pitched like that. And, you know, I ended up beating Randy Johnson. You know, I think it was about the third inning during that game. I could feel the anxiety trying to overcome the alcohol. And I just kept sipping on the water bottle, and it worked, you know. And then I remember talking to Harvey Dorfman after the game too, saying, hey, you know, I had to drink before the game, and he just said to me, hey, listen, that's not real, you know. And darn it if he wasn't always right, because that next game I tried it again, and it didn't work. The anxiety and everything just overpowered it, and then that was the end of that. You know, I had to face the music, and those next few starts were just, you know, horrible. And you know, I couldn't throw strikes, and that's when, you know, we all made the decision together, like, hey, I need to go down to the minors and work on this. And I went to AAA and then ended up all the way back at rookie ball.
Yeah, you said you could hear anxiety. What does it sound like?
Oh, it's the most awful thing ever. Not only could I feel it, but it sounded like blood was draining from my head. I could hear it, you know, in my ears. I could hear something draining, a sound. There was a sound that it felt like blood was draining from my head. And that's the worst. It's awful. I don't even know how to put it in words to describe how bad it is.
You worked on changing. When did it come to you? When did the light come on about maybe staying in the game and becoming something other than a pitcher?
In 2005, in 2004, 2003, I had elbow surgery. 2004, when I made it back, I pitched respectively out of the bullpen in the big leagues, and I was successful. But what it took for me to throw strikes was all day mental training and focus. And I had to, what I had to do was just try to, I had to keep that anxiety level down. The fact that I'm going to have to pitch today and throw strikes. And I just became this robot of a person, you know, similar to what you'd see on a horse when the horse is in a crowd and they put the blinders over his eyes so he can just see, you know, barely in front of him. Well, that was who I was. And usually I'm this carefree, fun, have fun guy. I like to pull pranks, joke around, be in the mix of things. And I couldn't be that, but it was more than that. It was just mentally draining. I felt like I was in a mental prison. And I understood, you know, I tried to look into the future and say, is this what I'm going to do for the next 3 years, 5 years, 8 years, whatever is going to become of this? And I knew that I had to make a change, and that pitching just wasn't for me anymore.
Yeah, Tony La Russa has said that one of the two greatest moments in his career was August the 9th, 2007, when you were promoted back from Memphis to the St. Louis Cardinals. Tell me about that day.
You know, that day was the most incredible day. It just started when I got the call about, hey, you know, you're going to get called back to the big leagues. I remember our AAA manager, when he told me that, I kind of looked at him. I was like, can you say that again? Because I need to make sure I heard you correctly. They're calling you back up. So, you know, I get to the park. One of my first memories of that day is when I walked into the clubhouse, just the all the guys, the high fives, the hugs, the welcome back, all that stuff. I mean, it was overwhelming. It really was. And then we get into the game. I'm facing Doug Brokaw. I get a 2-1. I'm in a 2-1 count, and he throws me a slider, and I didn't crush it, but I got enough barrel on it to know that I got enough of it that I was probably going to be a home run. I'm running to first, and as I'm watching the ball, looking at the outfielder, judging is it going to make it or not, as soon as I realized it was a home run, just this flood of emotions came over me. It felt like I floated around the bases on a magic carpet. My legs were numb. It was amazing. I probably should have slowed down and ran a little bit slower so I could have enjoyed the standing ovation and the crowd going crazy, but I had so much adrenaline flowing. I just wanted to haul butt back in that dugout and celebrate with my teammates. You know, everything, all the hard work that I had put in to get back there to that day and that moment, it made it all worth it in that moment right there.
I love what the columnist Charles Krauthammer had to say. He writes, his return after 7 years, if only 3 days long, is the stuff of legend, made even more perfect by the timing. Just 2 days after Barry Bonds set a synthetic home run record in San Francisco, the natural returns to St. Louis. I get goosebumps when I read that and I hear that.
I do, too. And then, you know, I thank Charles for that. I didn't know him previous to that, but I just thought that was so nice of him to write that and just really well put.
We only have a couple minutes left, but I want to ask you, I know now that you've been hired by the Nationals to be a life skills coordinator. Give me a definition of that.
Okay, so I did that in 2015 with them, and, you know, basically it's what they call a guy who doesn't have a psychology degree, but you want me to mentor the young guys. And I enjoyed it. You know, with all my experiences from what I've been through off the field to what I've been through on the field, I had a lot to give back to these guys. And, you know, a lot of young kids, especially at the lower levels, you know, they're coming from high school and college where they've dominated their entire career. Now they have those same expectations coming into the minor leagues, and now all of a sudden the playing field is even, and they're playing against guys who are as good as they are, and in a lot of cases better. And what they thought was going to happen doesn't happen, and it's their first time dealing with adversity, and, you know, it can really send them into a tailspin if they don't know how to handle it correctly.
You know, when you take a look at your career and your life experiences, there's two ways to look at it. Either the glass is half full or half empty. Which way do you look at it?
The glass is half full. I mean, I have a beautiful wife, two beautiful children. I'm the guy who gets to say, you know what, making it to the major leagues is hard enough once, but I've made it twice at two different positions. And, you know, I don't want people to feel sorry for me. I played the hand I was dealt, and I feel like I've played it really well. Now I'm a sports analyst for Fox Midwest, which I really enjoy. You know, one of the things with that too, that I did make it twice. Well, now I'm the only guy out there who's played in the big leagues as a pitcher and a hitter, and I can give that perspective on the game while I'm watching it.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you your perspective of baseball, having played it, having lived it, and now broadcasting it. Do you see the game a little bit differently, having all those perspectives?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I have an interesting view because I've done them both. I understand what it is to be a pitcher, and I understand what it is to be a hitter and an outfielder, and You know, and I can talk about all those different things. And it's not like, you know, where sometimes I feel like some guys who are a hitter, when they watch a pitcher, they're guessing at what they think the pitcher's going through. Well, I'm not guessing. I've done them both. So I definitely think I have a neat perspective when it comes to that.
Rick, we only have a minute left. But when you think back on your career, good, bad, and your life in general, is there something that's etched in your mind that you'll never forget?
There's a few. You know, my first time making it to the big leagues, because that's your dreams coming true. Obviously, the second time making it to the big leagues, because everything I went through, and then hitting that home run and being able to do it here in St. Louis in front of the fans who've always supported me through thick and thin. And then in 2010, when I played for the Atlanta Braves, I hit a walk-off home run, you know, or extra inning home run for them to help them, you know, to win that game against the San Francisco Giants. Well, I grew up a Braves fan and a huge Bobby Cox fan, so to be able to play for the Braves and do it for Bobby Cox, those are probably the three biggest moments beyond some of the magical throws that I had that I'll just remember forever.
Rick, I want to thank you very much for a couple of things. One, talking so candidly about your life, but also about writing this book, because as you pointed out during the course of the interview, people have responded to this book. They've responded to your story. They've said, hey, I had to live this. And to have somebody that lived through it and to be able to talk about it, I think that gives them confidence to maybe try to find some answers for themselves. And I think that's really important. Thanks a lot, Rick.
I appreciate that. I certainly hope it can inspire some people.
Rick Ankiel with us here on Sports Byline. I want you to check out this book. It's an excellent read. It's called Phenomenon Pressure, The Yips, and the Pitch That Changed My Life, and also to hear how he has overcome all these challenges and come back and done what he's done is very inspirational. We've got you on America's Sports Talk Show.